Welcome, everyone, to a special emergency edition of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we were planning on recording our Central Division preview today, which we will do a little bit later, but we are gathered here to discuss the end of the Carmelo Anthony era in New York. The Knicks finally traded him to the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday, so we will discuss both sides of that, and we will also touch upon the NBA's war against the U.S. president. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
FIBA Mellow!
So you're excited.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Sarah, are you...
The morning. I mean,
yeah.
I've been trying to, like, study up and do some work here. NBA Twitter has exploded multiple times. It's pretty incredible.
Right, I was not expecting that when I woke up this morning, but I was telling Bort before, like, I should have known something was up, because Woj... Let's go back to Friday night. Out of the blue... Woj tweets that Carmelo has expanded his list of destinations where he would waive his no-trade clause. He said it included the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, all summer he's been trying to push his way to the Rockets. The Knicks didn't want to take back Ryan Anderson. They couldn't find a deal that worked. So then he expands it to Cleveland. Then Ian Begley of ESPN reported also the Oklahoma City Thunder were on the list. And then, you know, Cleveland is in kind of the same situation as Houston was. They don't have any, like, big short-term contracts that are salary filler that they would want to give away. Like, they're not going to give away Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony because that defeats the purpose of acquiring Carmelo Anthony. So Cleveland didn't really seem feasible. OKC, as it turns out, was. So on Saturday, Woj broke the news right around lunchtime. The Knicks sent Melo to OKC for Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and the Bulls' second-round pick that they acquired in February. So, Mort, I want to send this to you first, since your former team was largely responsible for this deal. What do you think of, the price that Melo ultimately went for?
Well, this whole summer has just been, you know, you can buy superstars very, very low. And Sam Presti has just taken advantage, first with Paul George and now Carmelo, and I'm loving every bit of it. Like, we finally saw someone take advantage of the market. I have been wondering all summer long why someone wasn't aggressively going after these guys who could have been had for virtually nothing. In regards to the Bulls role, I mean, did we really expect anything else? I'm just glad that someone else just proved that the Bulls are shit. I mean, instead of themselves. I mean, they prove it on a daily basis just by the way that they are talking to beat reporters and whatnot. But finally, a team goes, oh, thank you for these assets that you viewed as a throw-in. We're going to use it as, you know, hardcore principles in a Melo trade. Because why not? We can't. You can't. Because you're idiots. Bye. I love it. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. And I was saying this on Twitter earlier. Like, good luck to the people who have to vote between Sam Presti and Daryl Morey for Executive of the Year. Because Sam Presti now pulled off two trades for stars and gave up, you know, he gave up his two worst contracts on the books. He got rid of Oladipo and Kanter. So even if, like, all three of those guys leave next year, at least they don't have money tied up into bad contracts anymore. But then Daryl Morey also, you know, getting CP3 to pick up his player option and, like, acquiring every non-guaranteed contract in the league, basically, to trade for that. Both guys did top-notch jobs this summer. So kudos to Sam Presti for, you know, the Thunder are really facing a precarious situation because Paul George is going to be a free agent in 2018. He has made no secret that he is openly flirting with the Lakers, and the Lakers will have the cap space to sign him. Russell Westbrook has had a 5-year, $200 million-plus extension on the table all summer. He has yet to sign, so he could be a free agent in 2018. He also played his college ball in UCLA. Like, there's a chance both of those guys left. instead of, you know, kind of hedging his bets and saying, like, well, you know, we don't want to tie up any more money into long-term players in case those two guys leave. Like, it's a big gamble to trade for Carmelo, because Carmelo could pick up his player option next year. Westbrook and George could still leave, and, you know, you're stuck with Carmelo on, like, a $25 million deal on a rebuilding team. That said, Sarah, now, you know, the Thunder are probably going into the year with a starting five of Westbrook, Roberson, Paul George, Melo, Steven Adams. You have Patrick Patterson off the bench. How do you see Melo fitting in OKC?
It's going to be interesting. Synergy tweeted out pretty much right after the trade news came through. I guess it, you know, the call hasn't been made yet, but everything is apparently agreed upon. Synergy tweeted, only two players scored over 625 combined post-up and isolation points last season, Russ and Melo. Mm-hmm. So it's great to have players with that ability, but it will be interesting trying to get them to play off of each other. It's entirely possible. They're going to have to take turns, and we've seen them do it in international competition. So, you know, we can't say that they can't do it. But each guy is going to have to understand, you know, it's a very different situation from Russ's situation last year. I think partially he'll be glad for that, but it will be an adjustment. we were already talking about it with Paul George. I was a little worried about the fact that they might quibble over who's going to get the last shot, because we know Russ is used to taking them, whether he should or not sometimes. Paul George has gotten on teammates publicly about it before, that he feels he should take it. Mm-hmm. Will he still feel that way? Maybe he doesn't feel that way if he's on the court with Russell and Melo. Maybe he is okay with those guys taking it. That'll be the most potential for maybe some disagreement. But overall, I think they're going to be all right. I would really love to see it work. I really would.
Yeah.
We'll see, though.
Yeah, I think it's, if nothing else, it's going to be a fascinating experiment. And, like, you know, none of the moves that happened this summer are guaranteed to work. So, you know, kudos to all of these general managers for taking risks and not just, like, laying down and playing dead for the Warriors. Like, you know, OKC is really going for it, which is great to see. Mort, you alluded to FIBA Melo in our intro there. Do you think that's kind of, do you think he's willing at this point in his career to play that kind of a role in the NBA, take more of a back seat, you know, serve as a complimentary scorer, a catch and shoot 3-point threat, and cede more of the touches to Paul George and Westbrook?
Brian, he played for the Knicks. I think he's willing to. I think he's willing to get water. Melo, go fetch some water. Yeah, sure, no problem. I don't think it's going to be an issue at all. Here's my slight hot take. Melo's going to take 10 threes a game next season. I think he is so all in. And just like, I don't know, if when you guys were kids, did you play Tekken at all? Does he get like a, you know, a combo style upgrade if he goes hoodie and FIBA Melo at the same time?
Oh my God, I hope so.
Yeah, because I would love to see that. But no, I mean, okay, Russ took a lot of threes last year, and to his credit, he made them. He made 200 triples last season, did so at a percentage, career high 34% off the top of my head, or something along those lines. So he's an improved shooter. Now Melo comes in, and Melo, at least we forget, like, we still, as NBA people, we never really seem to update scouting reports. Melo was not a strong shooter in Denver. He shot 31% from downtown, but he has shot 37% in New York on 5 attempts a game. He's a good long-range shooter now. Mm-hmm. Same can be said of Paul George, who canned, I think, 39% last year. So that is suddenly an asset that comes to Russ. Like, he's going to have a hell of a lot of opportunities driving the basketball. You have Melo spotting up on one side, Paul on the other side, and Lord knows, like, when one of those guys have the ball, Russ is going to be available as well. I love the fit. I think Melo, especially given his age, given that he was in basketball hell for about 7 years, he's ready. I definitely think he's ready to just go on and look at those guys, say, you know what, I'm here. I'm going to do whatever you guys need me to, outside of playing defense, obviously. But yeah. Offensively speaking, I think he's just going to take a back seat and get, like, 18 to 20 very, very efficient points a game.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We just recorded our Northwest preview on Tuesday, and because this league, it's already out of date, of course, but we were mentioning in that when we were talking about the Thunder how, you know, outside of Westbrook and George, they didn't really have any, like, surefire scoring options, like, as a number three option on offense, and we were concerned about their spacing a little bit.
So they went out and got the best third option ever. Right, yeah.
Like, I am no longer concerned about that. Like, I think I put Minnesota above OKC in my division standings. I would like to formally retract that and place OKC above Minnesota now. Because, I mean, just the attention that Westbrook draws in transition when he's barreling to the rim, like, he's getting double teamed. What do you do when you have, as you said, Bert, you have Paul George on one side and Carmelo on the other? Like, someone's going to be wide open. I mean, Andre Roberson, you're obviously going to leave him wide open, but, like, you can't double-team all three guys. There are only five players on the court. So, I mean, this Thunder offense now, like, I dare say they have potential to be in the top five league-wide.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Definitely, and especially you have Steven Adams out there setting mean screens. Mm-hmm. And also giving Melo the opportunity to play full-time power forward is just, that's a mismatch waiting to happen. What kind of power forward out there can match his speed, even at that age? I mean, that first step is still valid. Mm-hmm. His shooting stroke is still quick as hell. I mean, he is going to beast on those slower, bigger forwards, and Lord knows he can post up. Like, Melo is a very gifted natural scorer. We talk about natural scores all the time, and we also recognize that Durant is probably the most natural scorer the league has ever seen when we look at the diversity of the ways he scores, but Melo is right up there alongside him, just like an older version. His skills has not diminished. His role is interest, because of playing with the Knicks, has diminished. Coming to a team that wins, coming to players who are actually, good, will help him move forward. And there are so many positives for this. And one final note on Melo. Tom Thibodeau, when he wanted Melo in Chicago back in 2014, talked at length about how good he is of a passer that people never really spoke about.
Yeah.
And he was right. That is something that we have seen in the last few years. He even averaged 4 assists per game the year before last year, 2015-2016. Melo is a very, very good passer. We also see it on, you know, Team USA. Now he has players to actually pass the ball to. Mm-hmm. So we are going to see a very different Melo, but I suspect a better Melo overall.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm also glad you addressed the Melo at the four thing, because, Sarah, I want to ask about that. Because both Paul George and Carmelo in recent years, one could argue both players are almost better suited to play the four than the three now, but both players have been resistant to doing it full time. It seems like, you know, again, we're in positionless NBA, so I don't want to say, like, Paul George is going to be the full-time small forward and Carmelo is going to be the full-time power forward or vice versa. Like, I think both of those guys will be largely interchangeable. But how do you see that shaking out? Do you think Melo is going to be, like, more of a power forward than a small forward? Or do you think it's really just going to go game by game, possession by possession?
I would hope that it's going to be somewhat flexible. He certainly... What's hilarious is that I was toying with the idea of Patrick Patterson when we did our Northwest preview, possibly playing some stretch four for them, because he shot like 37% on 250 three-point attempts last year. So, like, well, maybe that could work out. Well, now they can do so much. It's going to be ridiculous. So, yeah, you could throw Melo in there. Hell, you could even, if he doesn't want to take the abuse of maybe getting some bigs posting him up all the time on defense, you could almost throw Roberson down there. I mean, he's somewhat slight, but he's long. He's not a pushover. You won't hear me say this a lot, so listen in now, but he probably is the guy who guards Kawhi better than anyone else. I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head who does much better than him. So, you know, he's got experience with that back to the basket game. So you can do all kinds of things to alleviate that stress defensively. And then offensively, yeah. Carmelo, I don't see why he would want to be resistant to that when, as you guys mentioned, he's going to have mismatches all day long. So, yeah, I mean, you can move him to the four, play him there a lot. You know, give PG some minutes there. Man, their length, their somewhat defensive versatility with guys like PG and Roberson and Patterson, man, there's so many options. They could really, really play around with flexibility as much as almost any team except for maybe the Warriors.
Yeah, so I want to ask about this. Sarah, I'm going to send this to you because it affects your Spurs more than Mort and I. So let's just imagine the Rockets, as of now, are going to have Ryan Anderson at the four. The Spurs are going to have LaMarcus Aldridge at the four. That doesn't really bode well for their matching up against OKC. So heading into the season, is OKC now the second best team in the West behind the Warriors?
You know what, Brian? I'm not scared because of one reason. Rudy Gay is going to rise from the ashes like a beautiful phoenix.
He's going to
play some four. Kawhi's going to play some four. Yeah. LaMarcus can slide on down to the five. I'm not afraid. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, so glad you said that.
Like, you know, twiddling her fingers. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm so glad you said that because the Rudy Gay Kawhi Leonard pairing is very similar to that of Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. So yeah. I completely agree. It's just the OKC version is just on steroids,
right?
Because, you know, Melo is still leagues ahead of Gay, and given the Achilles injury, we just don't know what kind of caliber Gay is going to return as. But I agree, like, theoretically, I'm not willing to put that as the X factor. Not yet. Here's the thing, though. With OKC, they also have Alex Abrines, a terrific long-range shooter, and they have Terrence Ferguson coming, who's an athletic freak who can shoot as well. Now, bear with me. If you want to go all offense for a few possessions, Paul George is technically long enough to play the five, Melo at the four, and then you go Terrence Ferguson at the three, Abrines at the two, and Russ at the one. That is spacing galore, and I'm not sure any lineup in the NBA could stop them offensively.
Warriors death lineup?
That would probably be the best guess, but, I mean, who do you leave open?
Why do you have to leave anyone open? The Warriors, they have...
Well, okay, yeah, but, I mean, I don't, then what's the weak link there?
Yeah.
Draymond? No, not really.
Right.
Yeah. No, okay, fair enough. Probably the death lineup, but still, that's one team, one lineup. It's insane, though. It's going to provide a lot of spacing, and I'm pretty sure both guys are going to play big roles because now you need shooters. Now you have to pair those three with shooters.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's too early to, I think, definitively call them the second best team. As Sarah alluded to, the Spurs at least have some counters, and the Rockets do too. They have PJ Tucker, who they could slide up to the four. Ariza can play some four, so it's not like this is going to guarantee swing that matchup in their favor. I do think it cements OKC as a top four seed in the West. You know, I was toying with them in Minnesota, but I think this puts them significantly ahead of Minnesota. Well, it's going to take them probably a little bit of time, as Sarah mentioned a few minutes ago, to just figure out the division of touches and push everyone's ego aside. Hopefully Melo, you know, have it, as you said, hopefully coming from the Knicks, he's really willing to just do anything and just accept whatever role they have for him, even if it means he's the number three option most nights. But
yeah, Phil Jackson crapped on him for how long? I mean, you know, can't imagine him not accepting that role.
Right, yeah. I mean, regardless, the Thunder were already, I don't remember where we had them in each of our league pass rankings. They were definitely in the top 10 for all three of us. They're now, like, I might be more excited to watch them than any other team in basketball. I'm so captivated by how this works out, especially given the stakes of what happens if this goes south.
Yep.
So let's turn to the other side of the puzzle now and look at the New York Knicks. Yep, that is the correct reaction, Morton. Yes. You know, they spent basically a year ruining whatever trade value Carmelo Anthony had, to the point where, you know, they now traded him for Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and a second round pick. You know, given what they gave up to get him 6 years ago, I hardly think this is what Knicks fans had in mind when his name was in trade rumors all summer and all year. You know, Kanter's a good player, but very one-sided. He's a good offensive rebounder, a good scorer, can't play defense for a lick. Same goes for McBuckets, who we talked about earlier this week, and, you know, he showed promise upon moving to OKC, but now in New York, I mean, more. I guess that's where we'll start. How do you see McBuckets faring in New York now that he doesn't have Russell Westbrook passing him the ball?
Similarly, yes, what he did in Chicago and OKC, really. He is what he is, a three-point shooter who does not shoot threes.
And now doesn't have a good point guard to pass him the ball.
Doesn't have a point guard, and also has picked up, like, I think 20 combined steals and blocks for his entire career, something like that, even less maybe. I'm not sure. It's just a ridiculously low number. I'm hoping the Doug breaks out. Shooting wise, he's not going to be like an overall scorer, even though he did show signs back in Chicago. But I just don't think it happens at this stage of his career. Even though, like, remember, being drafted as a senior, always a good sign, right? Good thinking, Bulls. Good thinking, fucking morons.
Yeah.
So, 3-point wise, maybe, but no. He's probably going to be a 20-minute guy off the bench. And that's for the first month, and then that amount of minutes is probably going to sag down to a whole lot less.
Yeah, I'm bummed for him because he really did show some promising flashes in OKC, and it sucks that he's now heading to a Knicks team where I just don't see him being able to fill the role that he did in OKC, at least. Like, you know, I guess they need shooters, but, you know, they just signed Tim Hardaway Jr. to that 4-year, $71 million contract. They still have Courtney Lee. I think it's the second year of his 4-year, $48 million deal. You know, got to figure those two guys are going to be the starting wing. So at best, he's going to get 20 minutes off the bench, as you said, Mort. It's not
probably.
It's not promising for his next contract.
At least the Knicks didn't trade Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic for him.
There you go. That's true.
They traded Melo.
Right. Right. I honestly don't know which is worse.
Well, you can say this about McBuckets. You know, he has significant trade value, apparently.
Immense trade value. That's true. When they flip him next year, it'll pay off in spades. Sarah, I was really excited for once Melo was traded. You know, I assumed they were not going to get back another center, and I was really excited for the Willie Hernan Gomez breakout year, but it seems like we're now going to have to wait a year for that. You know, they still also have Joakim Noah. He's suspended, I think, for the first 12 games of the season, coming off of his PED thing from last year. So they have a Sixers-esque logjam at the center position now with Kanter, Hernan Gomez, and Noah. How do you see that position shaking out?
That is a good question. They're probably gonna start Kanter, you think? Start Kanter and, well, they can't start him at the five. Oh, Jesus.
Right?
God, yeah. I mean, do you start a front court of Porzingis and Kanter? And then,
I mean,
bring Hernan Gomez off the bench? I'd rather see him get more time, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bring Kanter off the bench, please. And then, yeah, he'll feast on whoever. Yes, they got to do that. Let's all throw the prayers up now.
Yeah. I mean, that you know, they had their general manager had a statement posted on the team website, and he didn't mention Carmelo conspicuously, but he mentioned, you know, we have Nikola Tkina, and we have Porzingis, and we have Hardaway, and we have, forget who else he threw in there, but basically just saying, like, you know, we're embracing a youth movement, we're embracing a rebuild. So I hope, as you said, that they are still sticking with that and they're going to keep Hernan Gomez in the starting lineup, because he played pretty well, especially toward the end of last year. Like, once Noah went down and once the suspension kicked in, like, he and Kristaps worked very symbiotically together. And, we've seen in OKC, like, Cantor really thrived in that second unit role. Like, just beat up on backup bigs for 25 minutes a game. Like, that's what he is. I don't see a way wherever he goes next, because I don't think the Knicks are going to keep him past this year. Like, I think that's just his role in the NBA, and that's until, like, someone figures out how to counter small ball permanently, or unless he figures out how to defend a pick and roll. Like, that's just what these big men who can't defend well, that's their role. They're going to be second unit guys, and we've talked about that ad nauseum in the past. So, again, for the Knicks' sake, I hope they stick with this rebuild, and, you know, McBuckets now can be included in that young plan. You prioritize his development over playing whatever veteran wings you have. Maybe give him some time at the four and Kristaps at the five. Tinker with that and see. You know, you got to figure, like, you're already halfway through Kristaps' rookie contract, and, you know, his numbers jumped a little bit last year, but, like, I don't want to call him a disappointment, because, like, he's on the Knicks and the Knicks are a disappointment, but, like, he didn't take the step forward that, say, a Karl-Anthony Towns did. So you got to figure out, like, your primary goal this year is, like, how do we best utilize Kristaps Porzingis? And that should be, no matter what you do, like, it doesn't matter that you have three centers on the roster. Like, you should tinker with him at the five if he, you know, don't do it full time, but, like, give him some minutes there and see if he's better suited to play that role. Like, don't use Joakim Noah, that mistake of a contract, as a reason not to play around with Porzingis.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that would be obvious at this point, but you just don't know. Yeah, I mean, especially now that you move Carmelo, Porzingis has to be the number one. I mean, his development already should have been the top priority. It right. wasn't, but now what's standing in your way? Yeah, the Noah contract is bad. Everyone knows it. There's no reason to try to hide it or try to make the best of it by throwing him on the floor. I feel like we have to play him because we're paying him so much. Don't worry about it. Everybody knows it was a bad contract. It's over.
Yeah. Right, just deal with it. Like, you have to just let it ride out on your books, but don't compound mistakes. Just because you screwed up once last summer, don't use that as a reason not to, you know, play Hernan Gomez at the center, as the starting center, and then use Kristaps in a variety of roles. That would be, it'd be very Knicks of them to use a player's salary as reason to play him, but fingers crossed he will not. More now that Melo is gone, Sarah said that Kristaps is the number one option. How do you see him faring in that role?
Well, outside of him and LeBron, are there even any All-Stars left in the East?
Joel,
because that's another guy. Carmelo is another guy.
It's like five just, point this, guards, six if you include Giannis.
But, like, it's amazing. Here's another guy going from East to West in this crazy-ass summer. And last year, we were all talking about, wow, you know, the West is getting almost too strong. Well, giddy up, because, goddamn. Well, for Kristaps, obviously, priority numero uno, he's going to be the first guy to take shots. A lot of offense is going to go through him. N'Keal Okafor, you have to question whether he's, like, a point guard who can get Kristaps the right kind of shots, because if he can break down the defense, then that's going to open up a lot. If he can't, that's just going to make a long season for Kristaps, that's for sure. I'm not sure how he's going to fare, because he's going to draw a lot of double teams. Yeah. He is going to draw a lot of attention, and we've seen it only briefly how he handles it, and he did have this opt-out called Melo, who ran around, and at least we forget Melo is a good spot-up shooter, so it's going to be interesting. I want to see some creativeness out of from the Knicks this year to open him up and get him some quality shots, but I'm questioning whether that is going to happen with Jeff Hornacek there. I wasn't really overwhelmed with him as a coach, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I remember even, you know, last year at some point on this podcast, I think when the Melo trade rumors started really bubbling up, I kind of expressed some nervousness about once he gets traded. You know, I figured they weren't going to get a superstar in return for Melo, and I figured that would elevate Kristaps into that number one role. And, like, you know, he's the toast of the town now because everyone loves him, and he fared well as number two, and no one knew anything about him when he was the number four pick, and he got booed, and then he turned out to be a really great player. Like, what happens if he doesn't hit the ground running this year? Like, does the New York media suddenly turn on him, as they are wont to do anytime, you know, a player plays poorly for three games, and all of a sudden he's plastered on the back of the New York Daily News calling him, like, trash?
He probably jumps on a plane, goes back to Latvia without informing the team.
Yeah. Lord knows the Knicks had history of that last year with Derrick Rose. Yeah. So that's good. Mort, since I asked Sarah if OKC was the second best team in the West now, let's go with the inverse for the Knicks. Where does this put them in the tanking race?
Oh, that's a good question. Hopefully they're still ahead of the Bulls.
I think they will be.
I mean, yeah, because I want to see Chicago lose so badly. They deserve it. They deserve every every ass kicking that they're going to get. So, yeah, you have Porzingis, even though he's probably going to struggle a little bit with the added attention. It's probably going to take him a few months to adjust. I still think he's going to have a hell of a season. I mean, anything below 20 points a game now is just major disappointment for him. It has to be. Like, that has to be the lowest acceptable point total for him at this point.
For sure.
And when you have a guy averaging 20, it does something mentally to opponents. Like, oh, this... We need to pick out this guy a little bit more. He averages 20. There is, like, a mental barrier going on there, which I think he's going to carry with it. And then we have laughed about this contract a lot, and rightly so. But I do believe that Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to have, like, a better season than he did have, or as he had previously with both them and the Hawks. I mean, he's going to get as many shots as he wants, basically. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if he broke 20 a game. I mean, it really wouldn't. He probably not all that efficiently, but he can be a volume scorer, and his development was heading in the right way. So, you know, cross your fingers. Maybe you get something positive out of him. If not, then it's Noah situation 2.0, and you can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, between Anthony and Rose, you have almost... You have 34 shots a game to replace with just those two alone. You also lost Brandon Jennings this summer. Again, Noah suspended for a little bit. Like, they have 40 shots a game open from last year's team. So, like, yeah, right. I think you're spot on about Hardaway Jr. Like, both him and Kristaps, if they don't average 20, something went very, very wrong. Because they don't have any.
You know, right. And Nitila Kina, we don't really know what kind of impact he's going to have. We look at him mostly as this defensive guy, defensive-minded point guard, but you know what? We said the same thing about Dennis Schroeder.
That's true. Well,
so
we all hate Dennis Schroeder on this podcast.
But my point is, he could be a better offensive player than we actually thought. I mean, it seemed like he had pretty good spot-up numbers. So maybe that carries over. Not sure, but he is a 6'5 point guard who has some quickness to him, and maybe with all the focus on Kristaps and or Tim Hardaway, maybe he flies under the radar a little bit and has a good season. Who knows?
Yeah. For Knicks fans' sake, I hope so, but I'm having trouble getting excited about this team, because otherwise you have, like, what, Ron Baker and Ramon Sessions and Jarrett Jack as your other options at the point. Which is just a whole fat lot of nothing.
Don't knock Ramon Sessions. That dude put in his time in the NBA. It's time for keep getting him checks now. It's okay. I like that he gets checks.
Has he not suffered enough? Does he need to spend this next year on the Knicks?
That's a fair point.
The Bulls, I think, are safe, but I think the Knicks really... They might threaten for the second worst team now. It's going to be close between, like, them,
Brooklyn. And Atlanta.
Orlando, Atlanta. Yeah, all of those teams are going to be... Like, Indiana now, I think, is pretty much safe in 10th place. Like, they are too good for their own good. So, because they are capable...
Don't knock Brooklyn, man.
I mean...
Don't knock Brooklyn.
Brooklyn... I don't know. We'll do a season predictions pod in a couple weeks where we'll each give our full conference standings and whatnot. So stay tuned for that, because we all still need to do our projections. Sarah, any final thoughts about this trade on either side?
No. Although you guys were just mentioning all the Knicks options at point guard, quote unquote. I literally had to look it up a few minutes prior because I legitimately cannot remember who's even playing point out there anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, it's going to be not so fun. Sorry, Knicks fans.
You're like, surely they didn't just go into the season with a rookie point guard and no reliable veteran backup options, right? Oh, no, they did. Knicks. Mort, final word on this trade?
That's his go-to now. Just laughter.
Is that directed at the Knicks or the Bulls?
Oh, both. Both. I mean, look, it's so stupid. You know, it's just, I've been on Twitter for so long, and you just see, myself included, at draft night, I was like, if Jimmy's going to get traded, he's going to get traded for something good. Yeah. Everyone is just expecting these major returns for star players, and when things go down, unless it's for Kyrie Irving, apparently, it's just like 10 cents on the dollar, and everyone's surprised. Like, this has been a pattern all summer, and we're still sitting there going, wow! Like, we need to pick up on this soon. And NBA teams need to start thinking, hey, maybe I should be a buyer, because now's the time. Yeah. That would be pretty smart. And Sam Presti, to his credit, did it. And the Knicks, I mean, the Knicks are the Knicks, and the Bulls are the Bulls. That's why I'm laughing. Good on you, OKC, by the way. This is the best way to get over that bad breakup with Kevin Durant. I say good on you. I love it. And FIBA hoodie, Melo, Tekken 3 upgrade, whatever combo he's going to serve up, I'm going to look forward to it. 10 threes attempted per game for Melo next season. God damn it. Yes, it's going to happen, and I love it.
I'm really excited to see if... I feel like the smarter people on Knicks Twitter know that the Knicks did Melo wrong by the end, and they're going to be happy when he's a lot better in OKC than he was in New York. But I'm excited to see all the reaction from casual fans when Melo, like, suddenly turns into this hyper-efficient scorer, and they go like, where the hell was that the last 5 years? It's going to be really fun to watch Knicks.
Oh, but Twitter's a cesspool for ignorance. Just, yeah. I mean, I'm on there, so right. Obviously.
Well, speaking of Twitter being a cesspool for ignorance, segue. Let's go into our other topic du jour of the day. Before the Melo trade took over basketball Twitter, I woke up Saturday morning, log on to my TweetDeck account, and see, LeBron James tweeted at the president. Why did that happen? Turns out, so Steph Curry and the Warriors had media day on Friday. A reporter asked Steph if he would go to the White House if the White House, extended an invitation because they won the championship this past year. And Steph said, look, if it was up to me, it'd be a short conversation. No, I don't believe in what this man stands for, like what he says or doesn't say, in a clear allusion to his response to the Charlottesville riot. So Donald Trump apparently caught wind of that. And tweeted Saturday morning, quote, going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating, therefore invitation is withdrawn! ! LeBron James quickly followed up on Twitter and said, he didn't quote tweet Donald Trump or anything, but clearly in a reply to him, you bum, Stephen Curry already said he ain't going, so therefore ain't no invite. Going to White House was a great honor until you showed up. Chris Paul piled on and said, with everything that's going on in our country, why are you focused on who's kneeling and visiting the White House? # stay in your lane. So first of all, I would like to extend our condolences to those who thought stick to sports was a thing. I'm going to bury it forever. Rest in peace, stick to sports. Secondly, there's no need to litigate, the larger political climate in this country, and whether we do or do not support Donald Trump or the NBA players. I want to instead just ask more in general about social activism in particular. So earlier in the month, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, and Michelle Roberts, the head of the National Basketball Players Association, they signed a preseason letter to the league's players and said, basically encouraged them to be socially conscious. They said, quote, "None of us operates in a vacuum. Critical issues that affect our society also impact you directly. Fortunately, you are not only the world's greatest basketball players, you have real power to make a difference in the world. And we want you to know that the Players Association and the league are always available to help you figure out the most meaningful way to make that difference." I'm guessing Twitter war with the president on a Saturday morning was not what they had in mind, but unlike the NFL, which is continuing to blackball Colin Kaepernick, the NBA is very actively encouraging players to speak out on things they do or do not believe in. So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you. Just what, in general, do you think about kind of the NBA's stance toward social activism and encouraging players to, you know, speak out when they feel compelled to?
It's commendable and it's important. They are free citizens like everybody else. They're under no obligation to, you know, keep their mouths shut about things that they believe in. No one has to listen. You know, you don't have to listen if you don't want to listen, but they should be allowed to take a stance on things if they so desire. So I'm glad that Adam Silver supports that and Michelle Roberts. It's a shame that, you know, every time I feel like our president is presented with an opportunity to try to respond to something in the correct way, it always comes back like it did this morning on Twitter. But I'm glad that the players feel that they can stand up and that they're supported in doing so. Jemele Hill made some great points last week. Actually, I think the video had been recorded before that whole thing that happened last week, but that about why stick to sports isn't a thing. You know, that Greg Popovich and Stan Van Gundy and Steve Kerr, people have been making comments. They made comments last year. And so for her to get called out, it doesn't make sense. Sports and politics have been intertwined. You think back to Muhammad Ali, think back to the Olympics, Jesse. So, it's just not an argument that makes any sense anymore. Unfortunately, for the people who are still holding on to it, there's no leg to stand on there.
Right, yeah. Like, not everyone is Michael Jordan and says Republicans buy sneakers, too. Like, if if athletes want to speak out.
True business sense makes sense, too, but...
right. I mean, you know, Trump went on stage Friday night in a rally in Alabama and said, like, something along the lines of, I mean, he called people who are kneeling, he was speaking in reference to NFL players who are kneeling for the national anthem, he called them sons of bitches and said they should be fired. So, if, you know, if he, you know, the president of the United States is, politicizing sports, I don't think it's fair to ask the opposite, for sports to stay out of politics, if politics are intertwining sports. Mort, I feel like you're going to have, you know, a unique perspective here. Being from Denmark, living in Denmark, being able to see this from afar, and frankly laugh at all of us.
I am so sorry to cut you off right there, but that is very important to me because I am not laughing at Americans in general. I am laughing at the Trump supporters because they simply are so clueless and refuse to see the light. Those I can laugh at because in the end, he's hurting the country, and thus he's also going to end up hurting them, and they can't see it, even though they have every fucking opportunity to do so. Those I'm laughing at. You guys, I feel sorry for, because it is completely unreasonable that the average American who is well-read, who understands what's going on in their own country, should live under these circumstances. To have a sociopath, racist, white supremacist moron as president of the United States is just, it's horrible. And here's the thing. While that is horrible, it is also very unfortunate that in the world media, we use so much time to talk about Trump specifically, when so many other countries in Africa and in Asia have leaders who are just as bad. We need to do a better job of that generally speaking. Now, going back to Trump. And before I do that, by the way, you actually forgot a tweet from Kobe Bryant, which I will read.
Yep.
Yes. A president of the United States whose name alone creates division and anger, whose words inspire dissension and hatred, can't possibly make America great again. That is how is exactly how I feel, I should say. I look at what is happening in the U.S. right now. I'm looking at a man who is so oblivious to the job that he has run for and is now sitting at, that I can look to my left when I'm riding the bus and pick out a random Danish person and know that that person would do a better job than that guy. Even though they might not have any understanding of the American, you know, system,
right,
infrastructure, whatever.
To be honest,
I'm still precisely my point. No one should stick to sports. Because here's the thing. Those people who say stick to sports, they're white. They're all white. I am going to go this far. Not because I know it's not true, but from here on out, I'm going to have an opinion that's going to say, you know what, whenever I see someone say stick to sports, I'm just going to assume that that person's great, 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 great grandparents, you know, were slave owners. Because that's how I look at them. I look at those people like, you know, hey, if you're a sports guy, you're not allowed to have opinions because, you know, you're my cattle. You're my entertainment. You're not a human being with emotions and feelings and opinions, political responsibility. Oh, no, you're just a black guy who entertains me when I want to be entertained. Well, fuck you. Fuck you, you goddamn racist bastard. That's my perspective. It's not unique. At least I hope it's not.
Well, damn, Mort, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, no.
A lot of swearing there. Sorry for that.
That's fair. I mean, you know, even back on election night or right after, I remember feeling like very, you know, I think everyone, basically everyone in our generation just had this like black cloud of sorrow over our heads. And the thing that really bothered me almost the most is that, like, I knew it wasn't going to affect me all that much as like a white straight Christian male. Like I was in the least targeted demographic of, you know, whatever was going to come about from this presidency. And like, you know, immediately after he got elected, there were Klan rallies and people painting swastikas and hanging nooses, and it was like, you know, they're just going after every type of minority group there is, really. You know, I think the NBA is a majority black league, so it is uniquely positioned in that regard, especially in the wake of what happened in Charlottesville in August and his lack of condemnation, or, you know, trying to play the both sides and saying there are some really bad people fighting the Nazis. You know, I think the dog whistles that he's been blowing all year toward that base of people, it doesn't take a lot to see through that. I think, you know, kudos goes out to these NBA players who, like, you know, they Michael Jordan, you know, he, as Sarah said, like, he had the business acumen to say Republicans buy shoes. I'm not gonna isolate a group of people, like, prospective buyers of my product because of my political beliefs. And now, you know, fast forward 25 years and, you know, LeBron James on Twitter called the president a bum, even though, you know, he's got his own sneaker line and he's got his fingers like all over a bunch of business endeavors. And yeah, like, maybe it's gonna cost him some jersey sales or some sneaker sales, or maybe people aren't gonna go to Blaze Pizza because LeBron James is anti-Trump. But like, I think it takes courage, especially for a guy like LeBron, who, you know, during the playoffs, like, someone vandalized his home in LA and spray painted the N-word on it. Like, he's a high profile figure who is very easily prone to be targeted in this kind of stuff. So for him to continue to speak out against it, I think takes a lot of courage. And, you know, and just, I'm like, as an NBA fan, I am so proud of the league and its response to all of this stuff, especially, you know, compared to the NFL, where, again, like Colin Kaepernick, he started the protest of the national anthem. He still doesn't have a job. And, like, look at some of the quarterbacks in the league playing today. You're telling me Colin Kaepernick isn't more qualified to play in the NFL than, like, Ryan Nassib, who the Jaguars signed this week, who is terrible? Or, like, hell, there are starting quarterbacks. Josh McCown, Blake Bortles, whoever the hell the Colts are starting, Jacoby Brissett. Like, those, Colin Kaepernick was in a Super Bowl, like, 3 or 4 years ago. Like, he deserves to be on an NFL roster, but he is getting blackballed because of his political views. And I think the NBA taking the polar opposite stance and saying, you know, they're not saying, it's not just a, if you're anti-Trump, you could speak out. Like, if you're, they're not gonna, if someone's pro-Trump, like Spencer Hawes is a bleeding heart Republican. Like, they're not gonna stop him from speaking out in favor of Trump if that's what he believes. That's fine. Like, I think it's just commendable of the NBA in general to recognize that, Sarah, as you said, these players have rights. They have First Amendment rights. Like, a company should not be able to restrict someone from saying these types of things. And I think, you know, Silver, immediately upon taking the job, kicking Donald Sterling out of the league for being a racist shitbag, basically, has continued this social progressivism ever since. So it just makes me proud as an NBA fan to, you know, like, for my favorite sport, my favorite sports league, to be so ahead of the curve here. And, you know, professional sports, it often takes a lot for that ball to get rolling, but Silver has really, he's been one step ahead of it every time. So I just think him, Michelle Roberts, the players, they all deserve a round of applause for being willing to stick their necks out on something like this.
I would like to add something. You mentioned that some people might not buy LeBron's jerseys or go to a pizza place that he apparently endorses. The U.S. apparently lost $2.7 billion from a lack of tourists over the first half of 2017. Guess why, obviously. So it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's a public figure in LeBron who goes out and talks against, and then you have Trump, who is also a public figure, but in the worst way imaginable, and he's hurting the brand of the United States. LeBron, by any measure, is strengthening outsiders' bond to the United States when he tweets like this. Same goes for Kobe. Same goes for every journalist or, you know, athlete, whatever, who goes against tyranny, who goes against ignorance. So for anyone out there who's considering sticking to sports, you damn well better, or I will beat your ass down. Go political. You fucking need to, like, right now.
Yeah.
There is no point in human history where, at least in the modern era, where it's been more necessary as right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stick to sports or you're a coward.
Yeah, I forget who tweeted it. The other day I saw someone, it was about, like, Hollywood actors in the late 1930s, and they basically got the stick to sports version of acting. Like, don't speak out against Nazism. Just speak to act, or, like, stick to acting and don't express your views. And then, you know, we all know what happens. And I know I don't want to prove that theorem that always connects Donald Trump to Nazis. I'm not saying that necessarily, but, you know, it's a similar sentiment is, like, yeah, you know, in throughout parts of human history, when faced against oppressive regimes and strong beliefs that you are not in agreement with, you know, oftentimes people are being told to just keep that opinion to yourself. But more, as you said, now is not the time to do that. Now is the exact opposite time to do that. So I hope that, you know, the Twitter war today between Kobe and LeBron and Chris Paul and Donald Trump, I hope that's just the start of things to come this year. And hell, who knows? Maybe even Kevin Durant will make another burner account where all he does is just tweet mean stuff at Donald Trump. I think that would actually get... Maybe, you know what? That's what Dwight Howard should do. That's how Dwight Howard could get back in favor with the NBA community.
That was harsh. Right? That was harsh.
We forgot to sneak in a reference to KD's burner accounts earlier this week.
That's
so
true.
We had to get at least one joke.
He's
in
the happiest guy in the world right now. He's upset about that. That's like so far in the back of everybody's mind now. It's incredible how fast NBA Twitter moves.
That's so true. Oh yeah, that's like three stories ago. He's clear. Sarah, do you have any final thoughts on this whole social activism note?
No, I appreciate where you guys were going there towards the end with, you know, I'm not in agreement with silencing anyone's opinion, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not what a democracy is, right? At least that's not what a democracy is supposed to be. You're supposed to be freedom of ideas and movement, and like that's how you get better, ideally. I don't think we should be afraid of what other people think. So that's really the main thing. Of course, now that we have social media and the immediacy of being able to tweet exactly what we think the moment we think it, and some people in the highest office of our country unfortunately display that. Sometimes that can be a bad thing. Sometimes wait a minute and think about it a little longer. But I mean, that's what we're supposed to be ideally. Obviously, we don't always hit our ideals, but yeah, we're supposed to be able to share our opinions and talk to each other.
Yeah. All I'm saying is I'm excited for this week's episode of South Park, because should be a good one. Last week touched on Trump tweeting about North Korea, so I can only imagine that we're going to have more on that this week. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the mellow banter and the talk at the end about activism and what the NBA can do in that regard. Again, reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all of our handles in our Twitter bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too, Brian.